Ja, I made it time. I hope you can hear. I'm on time today. And we go on stopping after a series of imaginary trials where Bloom is accused. He's coming outside again, but he's surrounded by kisses. That's why we stopped, right? The kisses fly about. Right? Okay, then we resume here. Good.
The kisses, warbling, Leo, twittering, icky, licky, micky, sticky, but Leo, cooing, coo, 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 yummy, yum, wum, wum, warbling, big, come big, pirouette, Leopold, twittering, Leo, Lee, warbling, oh, Leo. They rustle, flutter upon his garments, a light, bright, giddy flecks, silvery sequins. Bloom, a man's touch, sad music, church music, perhaps here. Zoe Higgins, a young whore in a sapphire slip, closed with three bronze buckles, a slim black velvet fillet round her throat, nods, trips down the steps, and accosts him. Zoe, are you looking for someone? He's inside with his friend. Bloom, is this Mrs. Max? Zoe, no, 81, Mrs. Cohen's. You might go farther and fare worse. Mother slipper slapper. Familiarly. She's on the job herself tonight with the vet, her tipster, that gives her all the winners and pays for her son in Oxford, working overtime, but it looks term today. Suspiciously. You're not his father, are you? Bloom. Not I. Zoe. You're both in black. Has little Mousie any tickles tonight? His skin, alert, feels her fingertips approach. A hand slides over his left thigh. Zoe. How's the nuts? Bloom. Offside. Curiously, they're on the right. Heavier, I suppose. One in a million, my tailor, Mesias says. Zoe, in sudden alarm. You've a hard chakra. Bloom, not likely. Zoe, I feel it. Her hand slides into his left trouser pocket and brings out a hard, black, shriveled potato. She regards it and Bloom with dumb, moist lips. Bloom, a talisman, heirloom. Zoe, for keeps, for being so nice, eh? She puts the potato greedily into a pocket, then links his arm, cuddling him with supple warmth. He smiles uneasily. Slowly, note by note, oriental music is played. He gazes in the tawny crystal of her eyes, ringed with kohl. His smile softens. Zoe, you'll know me the next time. Bloom, forlornly. I never loved a dear gazelle, but it was sure to. Gazelles are leaping, feeding on the mountains. Near are lakes. Round their shores file shadows black of cedar groves. Aroma rises, a strong hair growth of resin. It burns, the orient, a sky of sapphire, cleft by the bronze flight of eagles. Under it lies the woman city, nude, white, still, cool, in luxury. A fountain murmurs among damask roses. Mammoth roses murmur of scarlet wine grapes. A wine of shame, lust, blood exudes, strangely murmuring. Zoe, murmuring sing-song with the music, her odalisk lips lusciously smeared with salve of swine fat and rose water.
Skorak eni venevak benoit Jerusalem.
Bloom, fascinated. I thought you were of good stock by your accent. Zoe, and you know what thought did? She bites his ear gently with little gold-stopped teeth, sending on him a cloying breath of stale garlic. The roses draw apart, disclose a sepulchre of the gold of kings and their mouldering bones.
Ja. So the kisses do their thing, warbling, Leo twittering, icky licky micky sticky for Leo, then cooing like doves, coo coo. Yum yum is when you eat something, children, wum wum, warbling. Then they say big come big, pirouette is a dance form, Leopold, between Leo Lee, warbling, or Leo. Then the kisses rattle, rustle, flutter upon his garments, a light, bright, giddy flecks, silvery sequins. So the kisses become things. Sequins are these metallic things on certain dresses, I think Spanish and so on. Then Bloom, and now Bloom is back in reality here. There's music, a man's touch. you can probably find out whether it's a woman or a man playing the piano. Sad music, church music, perhaps here. Then we have Zoe Higgins, a young whore in a sapphire slip. I don't know what slip meant at that time, what she's wearing here. Closed with three bronze buckles, a slim black velvet fillet round her throat. I think that's some kind of ribbon you have around your throat. Knots, trips down the steps and accosts him. So that's reality. Are you looking for someone? He's inside with his friend. Boom. Is this Mrs. Max? There were certain institutions run by women who were quite well known, and the madams, like Mrs. Max, they're often quite wealthy. Zoe, no, 81, Mrs. Cohen's. So the brothel is run by a Mrs. Cohen's, which looks like a Jewish name. You might go farther and fare worse. That seems to be a kind of proverb. And it seems that Zoe is given to proverbial expressions. Mother, slipper slapper. That's right. Evidently. She, the mistress, is on the job herself tonight with a veterinary surgeon, her tipster, that gives her all the winners and pays for a son in Oxford. Obviously, she's wealthy enough to support a son in Oxford. Working overtime, but her luck's turned today. That probably means that she bet, like most people, on Scepter, and of course the outsider won. Suspiciously, you're not his father, are you? Room, not I. So again, there's this father-son relationship that Bloom might be a potential father for somebody like Stephen. You're both in black. And then she starts flirting. Has little Mousy any tickles tonight? Her skin alert feels her fingertips approach. A hand slides over his left thigh. Again, the left one. Then Zoe, how's the nuts? Boom, offside. He takes it seriously. Curiously, they're on the right. Heavier, I suppose. Once in a million, my tail, Mizia says. I've never myself wondered on which side a testicles are, but it seems there's a variety there. And most people have all the right. I've never checked. What's in the middle of my tailor? Mesias said. Mesias is Bloom's tailor. So in the sudden alarm, you've a heart canker. That was a kind of disease. Not, Bloom says, not likely. So I feel it. Her hand slides into his left trouser pocket and brings out the hard, black, shriveled potato. Here the potato is. She regards it and Bloom with dumb, moist lips. Bloom, a talisman, heirloom. So it obviously brings some luck, a talisman, heirloom, it's inherited. For Zoe, for keeps, for being so nice, eh? She seems to take, she puts the potato greedily into a pocket, then links his arm, cuddling him with supple warmth. He smiles uneasily. Slowly, note by note, oriental music is played. He gazes in the tawny, that's a kind of brown-orange colour, crystal eyes, ringed with kohol. I think that's some black thing that you put on the eyes. His mild softens. Zoe, you'll know me the next time. Bloom, forlornly. And then he has a strange quote. I never loved the dear gazelle, but it was sure to. And here I have to look it up. I keep forgetting it. It seems to a parody of Lewis Carroll, of Something Oriental by Tom Moore. I never loved a dear gazelle, nor anything that cost so much, and so on. And then, and loved me. But when he came to know me well and loved me, it was sure to die. So it must be something fairly common at the time. And of course, that calls up gazelles, as in a dream. That are leaping, feeding on the mountain, near our lakes. Round their shores find shadows black of cedar groves. Aroma rises, a strong hair growth of resin. It burns the orient, a sky of sapphire, cleft by the bronze flight of eagles. Under it lies the woman city, and that's also something biblical. Solomon's Jerusalem, and there's something in Blake that makes it very complex, and I leave it there. Nude, a woman city, nude, white, still, cool, in luxury. Luxury also has the meaning in Latin, luxuria is lust, the deadly sin, luxury. A fountain murmurs among damask roses. This is a kind of oriental biblical image. Mammoth roses, murmur of scarlet wine grapes. A wine of shame, lust, blood, excuse, strangely murmuring. Here we get some kind of vision again. Zoe, murmuring, sing-song with the music, her odalisk lips, an odalisk, I think it's an oriental prostitute, odalisk, lusciously smeared with a salve of swine fat and rose water. Of course, the swine fat doesn't quite go with Jewishness. And then she says something in Hebrew, this is very famous. It means, I am black but comely, O you daughters of Jerusalem. And that is from the Song of Songs, the Song of Solomon. The Song of Solomon is the most erotic part of the Old Testament, which is not known for erotic thrills. And she says, I am black but comely, O you daughters of Jerusalem. So blue, or maybe he doesn't know that it's Hebrew. Bloom, fascinated. I thought you were of good stock by your accent. And then she says, and do you know what thought did? I thought you were of good accent, and that may be, and I don't have any experience of it myself, I thought, the answer is often, and you know what thought did. There must be a background of this. It seems to be a British thing. She bites his ear gently with little gold-stop teeth. Anyway, she has enough money to have gold teeth, sending him on a cloying breath of stale garlic. The roses to a part disclose a sepulchre, a grave of gold, of kings and their mouldering bones. That must also be a scene from somewhere. Ooh. So, no, we stopped here. No.
Bloom draws back mechanically, caressing her right bub with a flat, awkward hand. Are you a Dublin girl? Zoe catches her stray hair deftly and twists it to her coil. No, to be fair, I'm English. Have you a spagadoot? Bloom, as before, rarely smoke clear. Cigar now and then, childish device. Lewdly, the mouth can be better engaged than with a cylinder of rank weed. Zoe. Go on, make a stump speech out of it. Bloom, in workman's corduroy overalls, black gansey with red floating tie and Apache cap. Mankind is incorrigible. Sir Walter Raleigh brought from the New World that potato and that weed. The one a killer of pestilence by absorption, the other a poisoner of the ear, eye, heart, memory, will, understanding, all. That is to say, he brought the poison 100 years before another person, whose name I forget, brought the food. Suicide, lies, all our habits. Why, look at our public life. Midnight chimes from distant steeples. The chimes.
Turn again, Leopold, Lord Mayor of Dublin.
Bloom in alderman's gown and chain. Electors of Arran Key, Inns Key, Rotunda, Mountjoy, and North Dock. Better run a tramline, I say, from the cattle market to the river. That's the music of the future. That's my program. Qui bono? But our buccaneering Vanderdeckens in their phantom ship of finance. An elector. 3 times 3 for our future chief magistrate. The aurora borealis of the torchlight procession leaps. The torchbearers. Hooray! Several well-known burgesses, city magnates and freemen of the city, shake hands with Bloom and congratulate him. Timothy Harrington, late thrice Lord Mayor of Dublin, imposing in mayoral scarlet, gold chain and white silk tie, confers with Councillor Lorcan Sherlock, locum tenens. They nod vigorously in agreement. Late Lord Mayor Harrington, in scarlet robe with mace, gold mayoral chain and large white silk scarf.
That Alderman Sir Leo Bloom's speech be printed at the expense of the ratepayers, that the house in which he was born be ornamented with a commemorative tablet, and that the thoroughfare hitherto known as Cow Parlour off Cork Street be henceforth designated Boulevard Bloom.
Councillor Lorcan Sherlock, carried unanimously. Bloom, impassionedly. These flying Dutchmen are lying Dutchmen as they recline in their upholstered poop casting dice. What reck they? Machines is their cry, their chimera, their panacea, labor-saving apparatuses, supplanters, bugbears, manufactured monsters for mutual murder, hideous hobgoblins produced by a horde of capitalistic lusts upon our prostituted labor. The poor man starves while they are grassing their royal mountain stags or shooting peasants and partridges in their purblind pomp of pelf and power. But their reign is rover forever and ever and ever. Prolonged applause. Venetian masts, maypoles, and festal arches spring up. A streamer bearing the legends Cade Miller Folger and Matob Malek Israel spans the streets. All the windows are thronged with sightseers, chiefly ladies. Along the route, the regiments of the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, the King's Own Scottish Borderers, the Cameron Highlanders, and the Welsh Fusiliers, standing to attention, keep back the crowd. Boys from high school are perched on the lampposts, telegraph poles, windowsills, cornices, gutters, chimney pots, railings, rainspouts, whistling and cheering. The pillar of the cloud appears. A fife and drum band is heard in the distance, playing the Kol Nidre. The beaters approach with imperial eagles hoisted, trailing banners and waving oriental palms. The Chris Elephantine papal standard rises high, surrounded by pennons of the civic flag. The van of the procession appears, headed by John Howard Parnell, city marshal, in a chessboard tabard, the affluent poursuivant and Ulster King of Arms. They are followed by the Right Honourable Joseph Hutchinson, Lord Mayor of Dublin, the Lord Mayor of Cork, the worships the mayors of Limerick, Galway, Sligo and Waterford, 28 Irish representative peers, sirdars, grandees and maharajas bearing the cloth of the state, the Dublin Metropolitan Fire Brigade, the chapter of the Saints of Finance of the plutocratic order of precedence, the Bishop of Down and Connor, His Eminence Michael Cardinal Logue, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of All Ireland, His Grace the Most Reverend Dr. William Alexander, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of All Ireland, the Chief Rabbi, the Presbyterian Moderator, the heads of the Baptist, Anabaptist, Methodist and Moravian chapels, and the Honorary Secretary of the Society of Friends. After them march the guilds and trades and train bands with flying colours, coopers, bird fanciers, millwrights, newspaper canvassers, law scriveners, masseurs, vintners, trussmakers, chimney sweeps, lard refiners, tabernet and poplin weavers, farriers, Italian warehouse men, church decorators, bootjack manufacturers, undertakers, silk mercers, lapidaries, salesmasters, cork cutters, assessors of fire losses, dyers and cleaners, export bottlers, fellmongers, ticket writers, heraldic seal engravers, horse repository hands, bullion brokers, cricket and archery outfitters, riddle makers, egg and potato factors, hosiers and glovers, plumbing contractors. After them march gentlemen of the bedchamber, Black Rod, Deputy Garter, Gold Stick, the Master of Horse, the Lord Great Chamberlain, the Earl Marshal, the High Constable carrying the Sword of State, St. Stephen's Iron Crown, the Chalice and Bible. 4 buglers on foot blow a sennet. Beefeaters reply, winding clarions of welcome. Under an arch of triumph, Bloom appears, bareheaded, in a crimson velvet mantle, trimmed with ermine, bearing St. Edward's staff, the orb and scepter with the dove, the Cortana. He is seated on a milk-white horse with long, flowing crimson tail, richly caparisoned with golden headstall. Wild excitement. The ladies from the balconies throw down rose petals. The air is perfumed with essences. The men cheer. Bloom's boys run amid the bystanders with branches of hawthorn and wren bushes.
Yeah, quite a mouthful. Hmm? Yeah. So, Bloom draws back, mechanically caressing her right barb with a flat, awkward hand. Are you a Dublin girl? Zoe catches a stray hair deftly and twists it to her coil. No bloody fear, I'm English, and you can hear, this is English. Have you a swaggeroot, a cigarette? I think that's one way of costing. Do you have a cigarette, you know, or what's the time or something like that? You have a swaggeroot, and we know that Bloom hasn't smoked, as far as we know. So you see, maybe he doesn't. Bloom, as before, and I wonder if you agree that here Bloom also affects the English accent. Rarely smoked here, cigar now and then, childish device. Lewdly, now he's trying to flirt. The mouth can be better engaged than with a cylinder of rank weed tobacco. And then Joey says, go on, make a stump speech out of it. Now, obviously, the prostitute doesn't want to talk. She wants business. And here she's been speaking too long, and she ironically says, go and make a stump speech. A stump speech is if you get onto a stump or a podium and make a political speech. And that is now exactly what happens in the next pages. So Bloom, as a kind of a socialist, in workman's corduroy overalls, black ganzi with red floating tie and a pash cap. It's also a bit of the French communist. Then he makes a speech. Mankind is incorrigible. Sir Walter Raleigh brought from the New World that potato. We know that potatoes were introduced by British sailors from America. And that wheat, tobacco, the one a killer of pestilence, potato, by absorption, the other a poisoner of the ear, eye, heart, memory, will, understanding all. So, of course, tobacco is dangerous, and there were many warnings against it. That is to say, he brought the poison 100 years before another person, whose name I forget, brought the food. And of course, as you know, potatoes have become very important for Ireland. And the great setback in history was the potato blight in the 1840s. So the potato also reminds us of that. Suicide, lies. So he's talking about the bad state of the world. All our habits. Well, look at public life and our public life. And there you have midnight chimes from distant steeples. And I think we cannot tell, or I cannot tell, is it really midnight or is it midnight in the imagination, as may well be. Because the chimes say something, they say, turn again, Leopold, Lord Mayor of Dublin. And if you have been brought up in the British tradition, you will rather learn the famous story that somebody, Dick Whittington, was elected Lord Mayor of London, but he didn't want the job and wanted to leave. And then the bells said to him, turn again, Whittington, Lord Mayor of London. So there's a story behind that. So he's already Lord Mayor. Bloom, in alderman's gown and chain, an alderman is a city councillor. And they wear a gown and chain. And he makes an election speech. Electors of Allen Key, Inch Key, Rotunda, Mountjoy, and North Dock. These are all the electoral districts. Better run a tram line. And Bloom has once said in the funeral chapter, why don't they run a tram line from the cattle market to the port? So this is his idea of city development. I say, from the cattle market to the river, that's the music of the future. That must be a phrase. That's my program. Cui bono? Cui bono is a legal phrase, and it says, who profits from him? If there's something shady or criminal going, the question is, who profits from it? And then he says, but our buccaneering wanderdeckens, buccaneers are pirates, wanderdeckens, and wanderdecken is the captain of the Flying Dutchman, the opera, Wagner, a big, and Wagner is always very big. So that is a buccaneer wanderdecken, probably thinking that the Navy's brought all kinds of rich by crimes and by wanderdeckens in their phantom ship of finance. Bloom has been thinking that on the stage, that you cannot have big ships on the stage, phantom ship of finance. Then an elector says, 3 times 3 for a future chief magistrate. So he's gone beyond a city councillor. You see, he's rising to fame. And of course, the chapter is in a way fueled by aspiration, what you want. You want to rise in power and everything, and fear and guilt. The aurora borealis, that's a kind of northern light, of the torchlight procession leaps. There's already a torchlight procession. And the torchbearer cheer, hooray. And then it says, several well-known burgesses, city magnates, and freemen of the city shake hands with Bloom and congratulate him. Timothy Harrington, a real person, thrice Lord Mayor of Dublin. The Lord Mayor of Dublin is elected by rotation. You're only 1 year the one, then somebody else, so you can do it several times. Vice Lord Mayor of Dublin, imposing a majoral scarlet, major is from the mayor, gold chain and white silk tie, confers with Council Lorcan Sherlock, he was a real person also in the book, Lorcan Tennis is somebody who takes your place, Lieutenant Stellvertreter, that is it. They nod vigorously in agreement. Then the late Lord Mayor Harrington, that's another, in scarlet robe with mace. Mace is that kind of stick they carry in front of the Parliament. Gold major chain and large white silk scarf. So he proposes that alderman, Sir, he's already Sir, Leo Bloom speech be printed at the expense of the ratepayers. So his speech, which wasn't much of a speech, is to be printed. That the house in which he was born be ornamented with a commemorative tablet. And that the thoroughfare, hither known as Cow Parlour of Cork Street, be henceforth designated Boulevard Bloom. So you see, he rises to fame, his speech is printed, and his birthplace is renamed. And there should be a commemorative plaque. That, by the way, has been done. On one of our Bloom stays in Dublin, somebody designed a plate, a commemorative plate, and it was put up in a little ceremony in the suburb of Dublin, Clanmaster Street, and it was put up a plaque in honor of Bloom, and the people who were there, no tourist ever goes, were quite surprised. So Leopold Bloom, who never existed, does have a birthplace of his plaque, Clanmaster Street. Then Councillor Lorcan Sherlock, carried unanimously. Bloom, impassionedly. These flying Dutchmen, or lying Dutchmen, as they recline in their upholstered poop, you see, this is a kind of socialist speak against the rich establishment, they recline their upholstered poop, casting dice. What reck they? That's not a phrase you will ever see, what reck they? That is formal language. Machines, their cry, their chimera, their panacea, simply for everything. Lever seizing apparatuses, supplanters, bugbears, manufactured monsters for mutual murder, hideous hobgoblins produced by a horde of capitalist lusts upon our prostituted labor. And then he goes on, the poor man starves while they, the noble, the rich people, are grassing their royal mountain stacks or shooting peasants and partridges. And you realize what's going on? Instead, you say they're shooting pheasants and partridges. They're shooting peasants and partridges. And there's no such bird as what, but you can hear the word fart in it. So he stumbles. And say, Bloom, who we know is not a great speaker, here, even in his fantasy, stumbles. In their purblind pomp of pelf and power, but the rain is rover, and now he stumbles, the way, by the way, I do, is rover forever and ever and ever. So this is his speech then. And then you get prolonged applause. By the way, the scene that we're reading this week, and I'm sure next week still, once only took up a few lines, and Joyce expanded it and kept adding to it. And this next paragraph is one where you can see that could be endlessly extended. Prolonged applause. And you can see the applause is prolonged and is expanded in a long catalogue of things. Venetian Mars, maypoles and thistle arches spring up. A streamer bearing the Latin termina of fortune, that is the Irish tourist slogan, 100,000 welcomes. 100, that's become. And Mar Tov Melech Israel, that is Hebrew, how goodly are the kings of Israel, that is from the Bible, a praise of Israel. So Bloom, Irish and Jewish, comes up here, spans the street. All the windows are thronged with sightseers, chiefly ladies. Along the route, the regiment of the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, the King's Own Scottish Borders, the Cameron Highlanders and the Welsh Fusiliers, these are all battalions, and in England, the battalions were always given names. In Switzerland, they're just numbered. I was in the world famous battalion number 70, just for the record. And here, of course, and you have them from all the four kingdoms, Scottish Borders, Dublin Fusiliers, Cameron Highlanders, and Welsh Fusiliers. So, all over. Stand your attention. Keep back the crowd. Boys from high school are perched on the lampposts, telegraph, poles, windowsills, cornices, gutters, chimney pots, railings, wainscots, whistling and cheering. And you see you have lots of sub-catalogues that are extended. And of course, this is something that can be, that you can always add to it. And Joyce, in a way, seems to have gone on wild. A pillar of the cloud appears. The pillar of the cloud, remember, is what guided the Jews in their long trek through the desert, because in the desert you don't know where God, but God gave them help, a pillar of cloud to follow directions. A fife and drum band is heard in the distance playing the Kol Nidre. The Kol Nidre all arose. Yeah, it's a Jewish hymn, Jewish song. The beaters approach with imperial eagles hoisted, that looks like Rome, trailing banners and waving oriental palms. The crisp elephantine papal standard, there must be a flag for the Vatican, and it will be crisp gold and elephant, gold and white. I think that these are the colors. Papal standard rises high, surrounded by pennants of the civic flag. The van of the procession appears headed by John Howard Parnell, that is the brother of the great dead Parnell. Bloom has seen him, and we have seen him in the course of the book. City Marshal, in a chessboard tabard is something you wear, chessboard, because we've seen him playing chess. And then the other, the Athlone Prosperidalto King of Arms, they are traditional functions at the Herald in England. So these are official designations in England. They are followed by the Right Honourable George Hutchman, Lord Mayor of Dublin, the Lord Mayor of Cork, the worships the mayors of Limerick, Galway, Sligo, and Waterford, 28 Irish representative peers, that it would be at the upper house, Sirdars, that's an Indian title, Brandis, and Maharajas, that is the British Empire, bearing the cloth estate, then the Dublin Metropolitan Fire Brigade, the Chapter of Saints of Finance, and the Plutocratic Order of Precedence, of course, it's when you have such a crowd, especially at the English court, there's a strict order in which rank they go. Does the Bishop of Cambridge come before the Duke of York and all that sort of thing? If you're ever invited in Buckingham Palace, you have to obey. I remember what Trump did. You're not supposed to walk before the Queen. The Bishop of Down and Connor, His Eminence Michael Arden Logue, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of Ireland. That's an interesting word. A primate, the highest degree is called Primate of All Ireland. But you know that primate also is a word for, in the evolution of apes, monkeys, they're primates. So it's interesting that the word primate goes high in church and goes low in the human order. His Grace, the Most Reverend Dr. William Alexander, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of Ireland, you have two, because it's the Catholic and the Protestant. Then the Chief Rabbi, the Presbyterian Moderator, so we have all the other religions, the head of the Baptist, Anabaptist, Methodist, of Moraine and Chapels, and the Honorary Secretary of the Society of Friends. I think that's the Freemasons. After that march, the guilds and trades and train bands with flying colors. And here's a long list, and the list is all of existing or that used to exist trades. I found them all in the address book, so, and some of them sound merely historic and things like that. But they all did exist. Bird fanciers, coopers, bird fanciers, they're probably selling birds, millwright, newspaper canvases. That, of course, is not the union. That is Bloom, who is a newspaper. And these modern professions were not in trade. Law scriveners, masseurs, vintners, trussmakers, whatever they did. Chimney sweeps, lard refiners, tabinet and poplin weavers, probably Huguenots, farriers, smiths, Italian warehousemen. They weren't Italian, they were in Italian warehouses. Church decorators, bootjack manufacturers, undertakers, silk merchants, lapidaries, sales masters, cork cutters, excesses of fire losses, dyers and clean export bottlers, fellmongers, ticket writers, heraldic and heel engravers, horse repository hands, bullion brokers, cricket and archery outfitters, riddle makers, egg and potato factors, and all these fancy names, they really existed. Hoses and glovers, plumbing contractors, so the trade field. After them march gentlemen of the bedchamber, and these are also, I think, formal things. Gentlemen of the bedchamber, black rod, deputy guard, a gold stick, the master of horse, that's a real function, the Lord Great Chamberlain, the Earl Marshal, the High Constable carrying the sword of state, St. Stephen's Iron Crown, I think that's from Worcester, the Chalice and Bible, so there those. Four buglers on foot blow a senate. A senate is a kind of trumpet call for something official. Beef eaters, they're the ones who guard the tower, I believe, reply, winding clarions of welcome. Under an arch of triumph, Bloom appears bareheaded in a crimson velvet mantle trimmed with ermine, bearing St. Edward's staff, the orb and scepter with a dove, the katana. So these are all the applicants. And if you're well informed with royalty, you will understand that, and we just take it on trust. He's seated on a milk white horse with long flowing crimson tail, richly caparisoned with golden headstall, wild excitement. The ladies from their balconies throw down rose petals. The air is perfumed with essences. The men cheer. Bloom's boys. I don't know what Bloom's boys are, but they're based on something. Run amid the bystanders with branches of hawthorn and wren bushes. All of these things could, of course, be expanded. There's lots of annotations here, but it must be enough. And you can see it is the march that does it, the kind of overwhelming things without any restraint. Good. Now the actor should take over the rest of it.
Bloom's boys. The wren, the king of all birds, St. Stephen's day was caught in the furs. A blacksmith murmurs, for the honor of God. And is that Bloom? He scarcely looks 31. A pavior and flagger. That's the famous Bloom now, the world's greatest reformer. Hats off! All uncover their heads. Women whisper eagerly. A millionairess, richly. Isn't he simply wonderful? A noblewoman, nobly. All that man has seen. A feminist, masculinely, and done. A bell hanger. A classic face. He has the forehead of a tinker. Bloom's weather. A sunburst appears in the northwest. The Bishop of Down and Connor. I here present your undoubted emperor, president, and king, chairman, the most serene and potent and very puissant ruler of this realm. God save Leopold I. All. God save Leopold I. Bloom, in dalmatic and purple mantle, to the Bishop of Down and Connor, with dignity. Thanks, somewhat eminent sir. William, Archbishop of Armagh, in purple stock and shovel hat. Will you to your power cause law and mercy to be executed in all your judgments in Ireland and territories thereunto belonging? Bloom, placing his right hand on his testicles, swears, so may the Creator deal with me. All this I promise to do. Michael, Archbishop of Armagh, pours a cruse of hair oil over Bloom's head. Gaudium magnum annuncio vobis habemus carnificem. Leopold, Patrick, Andrew, David, George, be thou anointed. Bloom assumes a mantle of cloth of gold and puts on a ruby ring. He ascends and stands on the stone of destiny. The representative peers put on at the same time the 28 crowns. Joy bells ring in Christchurch, St. Patrick's, George's, and Gay Malahide. Myra's bazaar fireworks go up from all sides with symbolical phallopyrotechnic designs. The peers do homage one by one, approaching and genuflecting. The peers, I do become your liege man of life and limb to earthly worship. Bloom holds up his right hand, on which sparkles the Koh-i-Noor diamond. His palfrey neighs. Immediate silence. Wireless intercontinental and interplanetary transmitters are set for reception of message. Bloom, My subjects, we hereby nominate our faithful charger, Copula Felix, hereditary Grand Vizier, and announce that we have this day repudiated our former spouse and have bestowed our royal hand upon the Princess Selene, the splendor of night. The former morganatic spouse of Bloom is hastily removed in the Black Maria. The Princess Selene, in moon-blue robes, a silver crescent on her head, descends from a sedan chair borne by two giants, an outburst of cheering.
Okay. Yeah, we had Bloom's boys sing, and you may remember the custom. The ring, the king of birth, St. Stephen's Day, was called in the first. And on St. Stephen's Day, isn't that after a new year? The boys go around and say that the king is the ring of all birds. And it's devoted to St. Stephen. We have similar customs here. Then a blacksmith murmurs, "For the honor of God, and is that Bloom? He scarcely looks 31. Why 31? Well, that's about the time when Jesus Christ began to preach. We know very little about his youth, but the kind of time that's in the Gospels is when he was, and I think he died at 33. So Bloom is compared to Christ. A paver and flagger. That's the famous Bloom now, the world's greatest reformer. Hats off. The world's greatest reformer. And you realize there's something about it. Bloom tries to reform. There should be a tram line built. But Bloom in this chapter is, or in this book, is also reforming. He's always somebody a bit different. All uncover their heads. Women whisper eagerly. And then you have three women. A millionaire speaks richly. Isn't he simply wonderful? A noble woman speaks nobly. All that man has seen. And the feminist speaks masculinely and dumb. Then a bellhanger says a classic face. He has the forehead of a thinker. And if you know of all the prejudice about Jewish faces that have been launched in Cyclops, you realize that the classic face. Then there's a Bloom's weather, don't know what it's based upon, as a sunburst appears on the in the northwest. That's like the newspaper heading that we saw. And then there are several clergy, high clergy, the Bishop of Down and Connor. I here present your undoubted emperor, president, and king chairman, the most serene and potent and very potent ruler of this realm. God save Leopold I. That seems to be the official formula in a coronation. Most of you will probably see a coronation before long. What the word that isn't quite part of it, I'm sure, is undoubted. Then I'll say, God save Leopold I. Then Bloom in dramatic purple mantle, the Bishop of Down and Connor with dignity. Thanks, somewhat eminent sir. Which is also not quite the official thing that you say. You have to say something, I don't know why. Then William Offit Vermont in purple stock and shovel hat. Will you to your power cause law and mercy to be executed in all your judgment in Ireland and territories thereunto belonging? Again, I think that's the official formula, except that you would say in England and so on. And then Bloom, placing his right hand on his testicle squares, so may the Creator deal with me. Now that may sound very obscene to you, but in the Old Testament, you actually swore an oath by putting your hand on the testicles. And that makes perfect sense, because the testicle is the future, the descendants. So it's both ritual and Old Testament, and of course obscene by modern standards. All this I promised to do. Then Michael, Archbishop of Armagh, pours a cruse of hair oil over Bloom's head. Now, as I say, I haven't been coronated so often, so I don't really know what it is. I don't think they pour oil over the head, they put a crown on it, but you may know better. But of course, the anointed is Jesus Christ. And then he says, no, Gaudium Magnum Annuntio Vobis. And you know, this is the, for Christmas, ich bringe euch große Freude. I don't know what the good bearings in. And then he says, Habemus Carnificem. And you know, the phrase is Habemus Papam. We have a pope, but here carnifice means a sacrifice. So it's also, he's not only king, he's also pope. And then he said, Leopold, Patrick, Andrew, David, George, be thou anointed. And so he's Leopold, but he has a lot of names, as they do have. And you're right, Patrick is Ireland, Andrew is Scotland, David is Welsh, and George is English, the United Kingdom. Be thou anointed. Then Bloom assumes a mantle and cloth of gold and puts on a ruby ring. I suppose you get a ring. I think popes are get the ring. He ascends and stands on the stone of destiny. This is in Irish, and there's a stone of destiny, and the stone makes a noise when the real king comes. So that's in Irish, the stone of destiny. You see, there's so many echoes and things like that, you cannot possibly do all. It might be worth doing in some instances. The representative peers, these are the House of Lords, put on at the same time their 28 crowns. Then joy bells ringing, joy bells in Christchurch, St. Patrick, and these are the formerly Catholic cathedrals that are now Protestant, because the Catholics do not have a cathedral. They only have a pro-cathedral. St. Patrick's, George's, and Gay Malahide. Gay Malahide was a song that we heard before. Myra's Bazaar fireworks go up. And you remember in the 17th chapter, Nausicaa, we had the Myra's Bazaar with fireworks go up. From all sides, with symbolical fallow pyrotechnic designs. Pyrotechnic is fireworks, and it's phallic. This brings us back, of course, to the Gertie McDowell chapter. The peers do homage one by one, approaching and genuflecting. I think that's done. The peers, I do become your liegeman of life and limb to earthly worship. Bloom holds up his right hand, on which sparkles the Koh-i-Noor diamond. That is, I think, the most famous diamond in Buckingham Palace or something. Koh-i-Noor, it has to do with light, something like that. His palfrey, that is a horse of great stature, not an ordinary horse. King's oil, immediate silence. Wireless intercontinental and interplanetary transmitters are set for the reception of messages. And now Bloom, his first speech, my subjects, we, and of course he has the royal, we hereby nominate our faithful charger, Copula Felix, hereditary Grand Vizier, and announce, yeah. So he nominates a charger is a horse. And that, of course, is an echo to, who was it again, in Rome? Nero, I think, made a donkey or a horse a senator. So you can do what you like. Copula Felix. Herod, Grand Vizier, and of course, Grand Vizier is the Osmanic reign and not the British government. So it goes all over. And announced that we have this day repudiated our former spouse and have bestowed our royal hand upon the Princess Selene, the splendor of night. So he gets rid of his wife and marries a princess. Selene is, of course, Greek for moon. The former morganatic spouse. Morganatic is if the woman is not of aristocratic origin. So that is called morganatic, and they don't have the same rights and the same functions. For Morgan, the spouse is hastily removed in the Black Maria. That is where they carry victims to be executed. The Princess Selene, in moon blue robes, a silver crescent on her head. Now, a crescent on the head is either Egyptian or Islamic, descends from a sedan chair borne by two giants. An outburst of cheering. Then John Howard Parnell, that is the live brother of the dead, great Pontifical, raises the royal standard. Illustrious Bloom, successor to my famous brother. So he's also the successor to Parnell, who wanted to get rid of English law. Bloom embraces John Howard Parnell. We thank you from our heart, John, for this right royal welcome to Green Erin, the promised land of our common ancestors. The promised land, of course, is biblical, of our common ancestors. Then the freedom of the city is presented to him, embodied. The freedom of the city, you get the keys of the city, presented, embodied in a charter. The keys of Dublin, crossed on a crimson cushion, are given to him. So when you get the keys of the city, it's presented on a cushion, and there are the keys. And of course, the two cross keys are also the sign of the Vatican. Then he shows all that he's wearing green socks, because he's Irish. Now, one of the ironies is that the great Parnell disliked green. He didn't like green, the Irish colour. You deserve it, Your Honour. I think we got that far.
A little bit before, yeah.
John Howard Parnell raises the royal standard. Illustrious Bloom, successor to my famous brother. Bloom embraces John Howard Parnell. We thank you from our heart, John, for this right royal welcome to Green Erin, the promised land of our common ancestors. The freedom of the city is presented to him, embodied in a charter. The keys of Dublin, crossed on a crimson cushion, are given to him. He shows all that he is wearing green socks. Tom Kernan.
You deserve it, Your Honour.
Bloom. On this day, 20 years ago, we overcame the hereditary enemy at Ladysmith. Our howitzers and camel swivel guns played on his lines with telling effect. Half a league onward. They charge. All is lost now. Do we yield? No. We drive them headlong. Lo, we charge. Deploying to the left, our light horse swept across the heights of Plevna and uttering the war cry, Bona fide Sabaoth, sabre the Saracen gunners to a man. The Chapel of Freemen typesetters. Hear, hear! John Wise Nolan.
There's the man that got away, James Stevens.
A blue coat schoolboy.
Bravo!
An old resident.
You're a credit to your country, sir. That's what you are.
An apple woman.
He's a man like Ireland once.
Bloom. My beloved subjects, a new era is about to dawn. I, Bloom, tell you, verily, it is even now at hand. Yea, on the word of a Bloom, ye shall ere long enter into the golden city, which is to be the new Bloomusalem in the Nova Hibernia of the future. 32 workmen wearing rosettes from all the counties of Ireland, under the guidance of Derwin the Builder, construct the new Bloomusalem. It is a colossal edifice with crystal roof built in the shape of a huge pork kidney, containing 40,000 rooms. In the course of its extension, several buildings and monuments are demolished. Government offices are temporarily transferred to railway sheds,
Numerous houses are razed to the ground. The inhabitants are lodged in barrels and boxes, all marked in red with the letters LB. Several paupers fall from a ladder. A part of the walls of Dublin, crowded with loyal sightseers, collapses. The sightseers, dying.
Morituri salutant.
They die. A man in a brown Macintosh springs up through a trapdoor. He points an elongated finger at Bloom. The man in the Macintosh,
don't you believe a word he says. That man is Leopold Macintosh, the notorious fire raiser. His real name is Higgins.
Bloom, shoot him, dog of a Christian. So much for Macintosh. A cannon shot. The man in the Macintosh disappears. Bloom with his scepter strikes down poppies. The instantaneous deaths of many powerful enemies, graziers, members of parliament, members of standing committees are reported. Bloom's bodyguard distribute Maundy money, commemoration medals, loaves and fishes, temperance badges, expensive Henry Clay cigars, free cow bones for soup, rubber preservatives and sealed envelopes tied with gold thread, butterscotch, pineapple rock, billet doux in the form of cocked hats, ready-made suits, porringers of toad in the hole, bottles of Jay's fluid, purchase stamps, 40 days indulgences, spurious coins, dairy-fed pork sausages, theatre passes, season tickets available for all tram lines, coupons of the Royal and Privileged Hungarian Lottery, penny dinner counters, cheap reprints of the world's 12 worst books. Froggy and Fritz, politic. Care of the baby, infantilic. 50 meals for 7 and 6, Kulinic. Was Jesus a sun myth, historic. Expel that pain, medic. Infant's compendium of the universe, cosmic. Let's all chortle, hilaric. Canvases vade mecum, journalic. Love letters of mother assistant, erotic. Who's who in space, asterisk. Songs that reached our heart, melodic. Pennywise's way to wealth, parsimonic. A general rush and scramble. Women press forward to touch the hem of Bloom's robe. The Lady Gwendolyn Dubedat bursts through the throng, leaps on his horse and kisses him on both cheeks amid great acclamation. A magnesium flashlight photograph is taken. Babes and sucklings are held up.
Well, we had, we deserve it, Your Honor. And Bloom makes a kind of patriotic speech of the military successes. Bloom, on this day 20 years ago, we overcame the inherited enemy at Ladysmith. That refers to the Boer War that was only a few years back, where the British first lost against the South Africans, and then they became victorious at Ladysmith, the famous battle. Our howitzers and camel swivel gun played on his lines with telling effect. Half a league onward. That is another echo, and that has to do with the war they had during the Victorian times, and that was the Crimean War, when English and French forces fought in Russia. And one of the famous events was the charge of the Light Brigade, which was a total military disaster. And it says half a league onward. And this would be familiar to British readers of it, because they would know the poem. They charge. All is lost now, we heard that in sirens. Do we yield? No. We drive them headlong. We charge. So military. Deploying to the left our light horse, that's infantry with some horses, swept across the heights of Plevna. Plevna, what is a battle in, I think it was in, not Romania, Bulgaria, that Bloom's father-in-law talks about.